I'm Shanae Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Blue Wire.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
New England sending QB Jimmy Garoppolo to 49ers.
We believe we found the right guy.
Garoppolo, quick pass, caught by Kittle. He dives, and he's in. Touchdown, 49ers. Kittle is gonna go. Touchdown.
Yeah, you heard it there. It's Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. That guy sitting over there, that's Chris Biederman. He covers the 49ers for the Sacramento Bee. I'm Kyle Madsen, and I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com. I fed my cats before the show tonight, Chris. I usually wait until afterward, but they were so prevalent in last week's show that I decided as a podcaster, I should feed them before so they weren't bothering me during. And that's going to make it so they wake me up a little bit earlier because they're creatures of habit and they go X amount of hours between eating. And so they're going to wake me up a bit earlier, but I'm willing to make that sacrifice for the betterment of the pod.
Yeah, you're a team player. You're a true professional.
Yeah, thank you.
And your situation does not make me envy you for having cats. I have a dog and he eats sort of whenever. I like fill his food bowl up in the morning and then he'll just kind of eat whenever he's hungry. It's very low stress for me. So I'm glad that doesn't impact the pod, but I'm glad you're being a team player about all this.
I tried doing that when I first got these cats. I adopted them a few years back and they just ate all of it right away. Like just went to town. Huh. And so I tried it again and they kind of just went to town again. And I was like, all right, well, this is not going to work. So they went on a schedule. And that schedule now just happens to interfere with my podcasting schedule. So that's enough about cat food. Let's get to the Niners and the Seahawks. We'll talk about the game a little bit. And then we're going to bring in Danny Kelly from The Ringer. He hosts the Ringer Fantasy Football podcast. Really, really good show. And then he also does a lot of draft stuff for them. He does some general NFL stuff. We're going to have him on in the second half of the pod. Had a really good conversation with him.
About the Seahawks. Seahawks guy.
Right. He's a Seahawks guy. He's in the Pacific Northwest. That's how you sell a guest. Thank you, Chris.
let's
dive in first to some key matchups from the 49ers offense against a... Let me find the adjective. Subpar Seattle defense? That too soft?
it's really bad. Seattle defense, a historically bad Seattle defense.
Really, really bad. Most yards ever given up through seven games.
Yeah, 2,875.
It's so many yards.
It's many yards. They're also allowing 380 passing yards per game.
That's so great. Many yards.
It's weird because, and I'm writing about it right now and sort of talking about Russell Wilson, and part of the reason why Russell Wilson's having such an excellent season is that he has to because the defense is so bad. It's really remarkable in the context of what we're used to seeing from the Seahawks, right? Like the Legion of Boom was such a big thing, and they had, you know, arguably the best defense of a generation for a little while there when they were competing for Super Bowls last decade. And now it's a complete reversal where the only constant is Russell Wilson. And instead of being this sort of game manager who would occasionally make plays with his legs and win games for you in the fourth quarter, now he's chucking the ball all over the place. He's probably the best deep ball thrower in football right now. He's tied Peyton Manning's record through six games with 22 touchdown passes. He's leading the league in yards per attempt. And it seems like this is because the Seahawks defense is really bad. So if the 49ers are going to win this game, I feel like there's a really good chance that they're going to have to put up a ton of points, which is interesting given the state of the 49ers offense right now from an injury perspective. in that they're not going to have Deebo Samuel. They're not going to have Raheem Mostert or Jeff Wilson Jr., who, you know, we talked about earlier in the week. And he had, you know, 3 touchdowns and 112 yards. So it's an interesting game from that standpoint, just because we're not used to seeing the Seahawks win and win like this in particular. We're used to seeing them win. We're not used to seeing them win in this fashion, I guess is a better way to put it.
I'm interested to ask Danny what he thinks what's wrong with the Seahawks defense. Because I watched the Sunday night game against Arizona, and then I went back and watched some of their other games. And granted, they played a different version of the Patriots than the one the 49ers played, I think. But I can't put a finger on what's bad about it other than they just don't have good players.
Yeah.
And they run a scheme that requires like good talent.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something that I almost feel like I'm taking for granted a little bit, and I just think the 49ers are going to rack up a bunch of points.
Yeah, I think so too. And so what's notable about the defense in that it's sort of high variance from the standpoint of the scheme is reliant on having high level players at key positions, right? And they just don't have the high level guys. Even Bobby Wagner doesn't look like the same guy who was a defensive player of the year candidate all those seasons, right? Like, so they don't have a whole lot of pass rush without Jadeveon Clowney. The Carlos Dunlap trade is not going to go through in time because of COVID protocol for him to play on Sunday. And it's looking like Jamal Adams is not going to play because he's missed the first two practices this week after missing the last three games with a groin injury. And he's also got he was listed on the injury report today with an illness, which indicates he might have to go through COVID protocol in a similar way Deebo Samuel did a few weeks ago after not being able to practice. So it just doesn't look like Jamal Adams is going to be able to play. Their top cornerback, Shaquille Griffin, it doesn't look like he's going to play. Dwayne Brown practiced Wednesday but did not practice Thursday. Their starting left tackle, that's not a great sign. Their two running backs, I mean, we'll talk about their offense, but they might be down to a rookie running back because their top three guys are hurt. So, you know, it's like, it's easy to see this game being a shootout. And the question is going to be, can the 49ers come up with enough ways to score and maybe get a stop or two against Russell Wilson to go up there and pull off the upset? It feels to me this could play out like the Saints game from last year, the 48-46 game.
That would be a hilarious contrast from the type of games these teams played in the early 2010s.
Totally. Totally.
What do you think the absence of Deebo Samuel means for the offense? Because he just provides such a different element of deception and versatility and physicality that I don't think they can really replicate because he's such a unique player.
Yeah, and we saw it not only, you know, this year, but last year, you know, the last few games, I should say. Last year, he scored that touchdown against the Seahawks on that end-around running play where he sort of spun into the end zone. You know, Deebo... Any, I think he had a 100-yard receiving game, if I'm not mistaken, or at least I know it was a productive receiving game from him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's hard to say because, you know, we know Deebo has been a part of the running game and he's been doing that. And Kyle Shanahan sort of hinted at the idea that maybe because Deebo Samuel missed so much time over the summer that he's not really in a spot to be running a ton of routes, and, you know, not really in rhythm yet or in shape to, you know, run routes in a way that he's going to be a downfield threat. Like the 49ers are probably going to need him to be over the long run. And maybe Brandon Ayuk is more of that guy right now. But given that Kyle Shanahan clearly hasn't trusted Jimmy Garoppolo to throw the ball downfield a whole lot, Deebo Samuel is a really important player into what they're doing right now. But if Garoppolo's ankle is feeling better and he can push the ball downfield, then maybe you can negate some of what you're missing with Samuel by going downfield. Maybe George Kittle, you know, who tends to He sort of every other game is a big production game for George Kittle. If you notice that this season, it's like he'll have a 100-yard game and then a 50-yard game and then another 100-yard game. I think there's the potential for Kittle to have a massive game in this one, just given the matchup and the fact that Seahawks can't cover anybody right now and they're not going to have Jamal Adams.
Mm-hmm.
So the passing game to me is probably going to be a lot of Brandon Ayuk, probably going to be a lot of George Kittle. Obviously there's going to be a ton of play action. And I think the bigger question is what the running game is going to look like, because you don't have Samuel now, to contribute in that aspect. And like last week, we have no idea who's going to be the starter, who's going to be the bell cow. Like, for all we know, Kyle Shanahan could be doing like what he did last week and creating a game plan around Austin Walter or something, who's the practice squad running back. And stop. He'll come out of nowhere and rush for 100 yards and 3 touchdowns like Jeff Wilson did last week. So, you know, it's really hard to say exactly what the offense is going to look like, because we've seen so many different versions of it so far this season, because so many guys have been hurt. So I'm just expecting Kyle Shanahan to do a bunch of things we haven't seen yet. And based on what we know about the Seahawks defense, it's probably going to have a hard time stopping it.
Another Kyle Shanahan is in his bag game.
Oh yeah, great point.
Yeah, I feel it. I think it's going to look a little different than the Rams game, but I think it's going to have that sort of feel to it. Like, there's multiple weaknesses on Seattle's defense, and he's going to attack one until they correct and try and cover that, and then he's going to go another direction. And I just. Like we saw the Patriots try and really, really protect on the edges, and they ran Jeff Wilson up the middle, and then they adjusted to that and they started going outside. It wouldn't surprise me if we see a Jerick McKinnon heavy game.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either.
Do you think there's anything to what Shanahan said about they were kind of giving McKinnon a breather in limiting his snaps last week?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. He's the only halfback that they've had who's played in every game. So given that he's missed two straight seasons, it would make sense to not want to lean on him for a heavy snap count. And it also, that might have coincided perfectly with Shanahan wanting to give Jeff Wilson Jr. the bulk of the carries because of what he does on certain runs. Like, I don't know if the 49ers will admit this, but I think, and maybe Shanahan's talked about it in the past, I'd have to go back and look, but my feeling is that like the 49ers believe their running backs do very specific things differently, and they can create game plans centered around those very specific running characteristics that they have. Which is one of the reasons why Kyle Shanahan's offense will look so much different depending on which running backs are in the game, right? So I think that's something, like, he might be devising a whole game plan around Jamichael Hasty, for all we know. Or even Tevin Coleman, who is back at practice this week, having his practice window open while being on injured reserve. There's a chance any of these running backs can really take off. Like,
yeah.
You know, I feel like I have a good grasp on, maybe I've said this before, but I feel like I've had a good grasp on Kyle Shanahan's offense. But then, like, I have friends ask me fantasy questions about which running backs to start, and I'll feel confident, and then Shanahan will do something completely different than what I told my friends, and I'm supposed to be like this dude who covers the team who's smart.
Here's my, if you're wondering on the fantasy football thing with the Niners running backs, don't. I'm in a spot in one of my leagues where I'm just out of running back, so I'm starting Jamichael Hasty and I'm crossing my fingers. But don't start a Niners running back over a guy that you know is going to be productive. It's not worth the gamble.
Unless it's Raheem Mostert.
One of their current running backs.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. I had Jeff Wilson on my bench last week.
Yeah, I did too, actually.
Our fantasy football teams. That's why you're tuning in.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's jump over to the other side of the ball, because you said that this one is partly going to come down to if the 49ers defense can stop Russell Wilson, who's having an MVP caliber historic start to his season, is Jason Verrett and Emmanuel Moseley, is that enough to slow down DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett to where one of them isn't going for 200 yards and three touchdowns like Lockett did last week?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know because it feels like it's just a really tough matchup. And I know Emmanuel Moseley played pretty well against DK Metcalf last year. I think DK Metcalf is probably a much improved player from last year, and the numbers bear that out. You know, Jason Verrett was on Zoom today and fielding questions about, you know, what are the keys to covering a guy who's got, like, I mean, Jason Verrett's 5'9 and probably 190 pounds, and DK Metcalf is, what, 6'4, 230?
He's like an Avenger.
Right.
Avenger-sized.
Right. So what Jason Verrett said is he's going to use his advantage in quickness and foot speed and just be locked in on Metcalf's hips. And, you know, with all the talk about Metcalf not being able to change directions at the Combine 2 years ago, I mean, it sounds like that's sort of what the 49ers are banking on in terms of having an advantage in coverage, is that they can outquick him. They might be able to beat him to spots and you know, it prevent him from catching the ball that way. But what I can't tell you is, like, what's going to happen when Russell Wilson scrambles and Metcalf starts freelancing and then just bolts downfield and Wilson throws a 40-yard pass on the run. You know, like, that's part of Wilson's game, and that's really difficult to cover. And I'd imagine it's even more difficult to cover when you're giving up 6 inches and 40 pounds on somebody.
I think that specific play you're talking about, two things. One, I think it's a little bit funny that DK Metcalf fell so far in the draft because people are like, he can't change directions. All he can do is be big and fast. And the Seahawks are like, great, go be big and fast.
Right.
It's like, oh, you put a player in a position to use his skills and he plays well. That's crazy. I think Jimmy Ward coming back to practice is a significant deal because of, and if he plays, it'll be a significant deal because of that specific scenario you just laid out. He's really good at helping the Niners limit big plays, and he's a huge reason that they were one of the best defenses in the league at that last year.
Yeah.
And I don't think Tavarius Moore is bad. I have nothing against Tavarius Moore. I just think Jimmy Ward's really, really good, especially in that aspect of his game.
Yeah, when you're playing Russell Wilson and the Seahawks and Wilson scrambling around, that's like the deepest end of the pool. And Tavarius Moore is just kind of like learning to swim without floaties at this point. Right? That's not to say he's a bad player, but it's like
Moore is learning to swim without floaties. That's a thing that's never been said. Ever.
But in comparison, Jimmy Ward can swim in the deep end of the pool right now. Like, Tavarius Moore is a backup.
No, I got what you're saying.
Right? Like, that's not... That probably sounds harsher than I meant it.
No,
I think Tavarius Moore is
inexperienced.
Good.
Tavarius Moore is inexperienced. It's not a hot take.
Okay, yeah.
It's just an empirical fact.
My other Tavarius Moore take is he's the best 49ers defender who doesn't get enough playing time.
I can see that. I can rock with that.
Yeah, like, I think he's probably the only non-starter that they have who probably should start at some point.
I could see that.
I don't think he's better than Jimmy Ward right now, but I do think he has a different skill set for sure. I was actually talking with our guy Wagner today at practice, Nick Wagner of ESPN. Shout
cast
out.
Cast member.
Yeah, everybody's favorite cast member. It was like, man, in the offseason, I would see if I could get Tarvarius Moore to throw on 10 pounds of muscle and maybe move him to strong safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's got a very wiry frame. It seems like he would be somebody who could add weight and still maintain his speed. And if he plays with the physicality that he played with against New England, and he's able to stay healthy in a role closer to the line of scrimmage, I think he could potentially be a really good strong safety. And then that solves your potential Jaquaski Tartt question with him being a free agent in the spring. And that allows you to keep him in the fold and Jimmy Ward in the fold because of all the reasons you mentioned for, you know, how good he is as a strong safety or a free safety, Jimmy Ward.
I want to ask you about some of the guys who came back from IR this week and were back in practice who are also not on IR. I'll ask you one at a time here. Quan Alexander was back in practice today. I thought that was a little bit surprising.
Yeah.
He had a high ankle sprain. Showed up in practice today. He was officially listed as limited. There were several videos of him working out. Looked to be moving pretty well, but I mean, you can only glean so much from a video. Do you foresee Quan Alexander playing this weekend, or is this just a testing it out and kind of seeing where he's at?
So I've sort of grouped all the guys you're going to talk about into two categories, like guys who could potentially play Saturday or Sunday and guys who they're probably trying to ramp up for next week's Thursday night game.
Okay.
Against the Packers. So I think Quan Alexander falls into that Packers category. I think with him returning to practice today, he can get a practice in today, a light one tomorrow, and then a full practice next Tuesday, which will give him three with some time in between spaced out. And then potentially he could make his return Thursday against the Packers if he's healthy. So okay. I think him practicing today is certainly a good sign. I just don't think, based on the way he was moving, it seems like he was very deliberate and still in sort of the feeling out process of what it's like to run around and cut on that ankle rather than somebody who's gearing up to play. Based on, you know, I'm kind of a layman, but based on like watching him move around at practice today.
You're a gait expert.
Sure.
Sure. Okay, so we're dropping him in the Packers bucket.
Yeah.
Tevin Coleman, is he going in the Seahawks or Packers bucket?
I think he's going to be able to play this weekend.
Okay.
He's missed he's been out since week three. He seems like he's been moving around. He's been doing some conditioning on the side field even last week. I think he's setting up to play. And the 49ers, despite the injuries at running back, they might be able to field a pretty competent running game with Coleman, Jamichael Hasty, and Jerick McKinnon.
Okay. Jordan Reed was a little bit of a surprise coming back to practice. They opened his practice window, gives him 21 days before they have to make a decision on activating him or putting him on season-ending IR. Is he in the Packers or Seahawks bucket?
Definitely more towards the Packers bucket, in my opinion, and it wouldn't surprise me if they waited until the New Orleans game.
We're running out of buckets.
The week after that, because you do get the extended time off between the Thursday game and the Sunday game the following week. Reed looks very much in the infancy of a comeback right now. The way he was moving around with the wrap on his left knee, very much in the same camp as Alexander. And if the 49ers are operating in the same way as they did over the summer when they took things extremely slowly with Jordan Reed, it wouldn't surprise me if they use a lot of that 21-day window and maybe add him back for that Saints game. But, you know, if I were to predict what Kyle Shanahan's going to say about it Friday when he's asked, I think he's going to say, you know, they're going to be hoping for him against the Packers, but it might be more realistic that he's available for the Saints.
And K'Wan Williams is another guy who was activated off IR at the 3-week mark. He was on injured reserve. He got hurt against the Eagles. He's on injured reserve for his 3 weeks. They opened his practice window. Is he playing against the Seahawks or Packers, you think?
Yeah, I think Seahawks.
Or Saints, since apparently you're just generating third buckets out of midair.
I think Reed's going to be the only guy I toss into that one out of the guys who came back this week.
Okay.
But no, I think K'Wan Williams will be able to play against the Seahawks, which is a good thing. I mean, for Jamar Taylor to play as well as he did in the last couple weeks, I still think you'd way rather have K'Wan Williams trying to cover, you know, Tyler Lockett in the slot. And you know, we know how good of a blitzer he is, and you know, he can force fumbles and things like that, which he did against the Seahawks last year. So but I think K'Wan Williams is trending towards playing on Sunday.
I think that's it.
Tevin
Coleman,
so.
Quan Alexander, K'Wan Williams, and Jordan Reed.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, getting Reed back at some point before the bye would be a pretty significant win for the Niners, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I was expecting him to be out quite a while. Him coming back next week would be just shy of the 6-week mark since he got hurt against the Giants.
Right.
And that was on the front end of his 6 to 8 week timeline. Right. And it's hard to believe a guy with that injury history, they would quote unquote rush back. So I think you might be right on the Saints thing.
Yeah. Just thinking about all, like, if the 49ers can eventually get all these guys healthy based on all the different versions of the offense we've seen, like a running game with Jeff Wilson Jr. and Raheem Mostert, and then adding Jordan Reed into the mix as a pass catcher, getting Deebo Samuel back, like there are the makings of a really, really good offense. And somehow the 49ers are still skating through this thing despite all these injuries. I mean, it's, if the 49ers make the playoffs, here's a take. If the 49ers make the playoffs, Kyle Shanahan's got to win coach of the year, right?
Yes. I'm trying to think if it depends. If they like sneak in because a team loses on the last day, then, and they sneak in at like 9-7 and the Cardinals win the division at like 12-4. Then
wow,
I think maybe
4 Cardinals. That's a bigger take than your whatever you're going to say about Shanahan.
No, I didn't say that's what they're going to do. I'm trying to flesh out a scenario because I agree with you. If the Niners go 10-6 and they make the playoffs handily, yeah, I think that's probably right because you're going to start factoring in all those injuries, and we especially don't know what the team's going to look like in Week 17. But I'm just saying, if it's not just cut and dry, they make the playoffs, he wins the award. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's
like
fair.
If the Cardinals go 12-4 and win the division, I don't think they will. But if they do, I think you're all of a sudden looking at Cliff Kingsbury, regardless of what the 49ers do.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Thanks.
Good. No, that's a good point.
And Brian Flores in Miami, if Tua comes in and starts tearing it up, you know, there's ways. But to your point, if the Niners go like 10-6 or 11-5 and make the postseason, that's Shanahan's award for sure. Let's get to predictions, and then we will hit a break and get to Danny Kelly. The 49ers are underdogs by 3 points. That's the last line I saw. Do you think they cover the 3 points?
I think they cover. I think the Seahawks win.
Okay.
But it wouldn't surprise me if the 49ers won. I just think Russell Wilson's probably not going to have a second bad game in a row. And I think it's probably going to take a bad game for Russell Wilson, or at least like a B game at worst, or maybe at best for the Niners to win, if that makes sense. Like mm-hmm. if Russell Wilson has an A performance, I have a really hard time seeing a banged up 49ers team going in there and winning. On the other hand, given all the injuries that the Seahawks have and the potential advantages the 49ers have offensively, I could see them going up there and winning while getting, you know, forcing a turnover somehow, blocking a punt, getting a special teams touchdown, something. I could see them winning for sure, but I just can't, based on what I've seen from Russell Wilson this year, I just think he's at a completely different level. I think DK Metcalf's going to be really difficult for the 49ers to cover. Tyler Lockett is just an incredibly good receiver.
He's so good, dude.
Like, that game he had against Arizona, that catch, that sliding catch he had in the back of the end zone where he somehow managed to keep 2 feet in. Like, he's just incredibly good. So, as good as the 49ers cornerbacks have played, I do think the Seahawks have an advantage there. And so while I could see the 49ers going up there and winning, and it's pretty apparent what that formula would be, I just can't pick it based on what I've seen from Russell Wilson this season, who's like very clearly the MVP of the league through, you know, 7 weeks.
Sure.
So I have to pick the Seahawks because I can't bank on Russell Wilson not playing well enough for them to win, if that makes sense.
For what it's worth, the Seahawks, taking the Seahawks -3, you get better odds than taking the Niners +3.
Okay.
What's your prediction? Also, the over-under on the game is 53.5, which is the highest over-under of the week. And I think I'm going over on that.
Yeah, I think overs, like if it's a 31-33 game, I don't think that would be surprising at all.
Yeah, I think that the Seahawks win but I think maybe they get like a late score or something to make it look a little more lopsided than it was. I like the Seahawks minus the 3, especially plus at plus 100, which means you bet 100 to win 100. I just, like I said, I think even if they're up 3 or 4, you know, and it's in that range, maybe they get a late score or something and kind of push it over that minus 3. So I do think Seattle wins for a lot of the things you just said. Like, it's really hard to imagine Russell Wilson having a second bad game in a row. The Niners defense hasn't quite been tested yet against an offense as prolific as Seattle's. But to that point, it's hard to count out this 49ers team really in anything, regardless of who's playing what position. So if they win, I would not be shocked. But I mean, the 49ers, if I was betting on the game, I think I would take Seattle.
Yeah, the 49ers, like, they're in a good spot to, I don't know how to explain the point that I'm going to try to make, but they're a team that is good at getting up for these types of games. Like, Kyle Shanahan will generally have a good game plan. The offense, you know, usually shows up in games like this when it has, you know, George Kittle. The question is going to be, you know, can the defense be good enough and make enough plays to stop Russ? And it's going to be a weird game. Like, it's the Seahawks. It's going to be a weird game. It might come down to like a Robbie Gould field goal or an extra point or something. There's, you know, Jason Verrett said it. He's like, I'm expecting it to come down to the last drive. It's basically what he said Thursday in a Zoom call. So that's sort of my line of thinking on it. Like,
is there
a Seahawks
game that doesn't come down to the last drive?
They don't blow anybody out, do they?
Not really.
And they sort of like play down to their competition a little bit when they play bad teams. So like, there are going to be opportunities. The question is going to be, can the 49ers take advantage? But
the other thing worth keeping an eye on here is the division gets very interesting if the 49ers win.
Yeah, there would be what, 3 teams with 5 wins, depending on what the Rams did? 4 teams? Would all 4 have 5 wins?
Yes.
Wow.
But then obviously, you know, the Rams and Cardinals.
But they already have at least 5 wins.
Yeah, it's Seahawks at 5-1, Rams and Cardinals at 5-2, and Niners at 4-3.
I don't know if the NFC West has ever been this good.
Bananas NFC West.
Top to bottom, like, really, really good division.
The 49ers would be in second place in the NFC South. Check that. A half game back a second. New Orleans is 4-2. They'd be third place in the NFC North because the Packers and Bears are both off to hot starts. They would be in first place by a lot in the NFC East. They'd be in second place in the AFC East. They'd be in fourth in the AFC North. The AFC North's really good too.
Yeah.
So, but the NFC West is crazy. And I think that until proven otherwise, I think that 4 NFC West teams could make the playoffs thing is going to be very real.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, particularly if they split, like if they split all their division games, if there isn't one team that's just beating everybody in the division, which I don't think there will be.
The other thing real quick, it's amazing how much, and this goes a little bit toward that thing you might have seen on the internet where if the 49ers win on Sunday, like we talked about after that Eagles-Dolphins back-to-back games, when they lost those, we talked about, hey, they're going to play like this. It's really hard to find wins on the schedule with the Rams and Patriots and Seahawks and Packers and Saints and all that coming up. But if they beat Seattle, they'll have beat the Rams, Patriots, and Seahawks in 3 consecutive games. And now all of a sudden, it's like, well, it's hard to find a loss on the schedule. It's crazy what one... It's a week-to-week league, Chris. You know, I say that a lot. But
yeah,
that's what really... Going into this game, that's something that really stands out to me is just how we're calibrating the expectations for the 49ers and just kind of the fulcrum that this game provides.
Yeah, the so the win against New England gave the 49ers an 18% bump in making the playoffs.
Gosh.
Based on some Googling I just did while you were talking. So I was unable to see that thing on the internet that I saw earlier in my short time of Googling that said their playoff chances increased significantly with a win on Sunday. But like, I think, you know, like, it would it surprise you if the 49ers went up there and won?
No, not at all. That's why I'm not betting on the game, because
yeah, I think it's a stay away.
If future Chris came up to me right now and said, hey, the Niners go to Seattle and win by 10 points, I would just buy it. But, okay, I can see that. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that one surprised me. It being a completely crazy game like Week 17 wouldn't surprise me. The Seahawks just doing a bunch of weird stuff on offense that the 49ers can't slow down because they don't have the horses wouldn't surprise me. It's a high variance game, but I do think, based on what we know about Kyle Shanahan and all that, they're going to go in there with a plan that's probably going to work offensively. And the fact that there isn't going to be any fans in the stadium is going to take away a lot of what makes it so tough to play up there. Yeah. I think the 49ers have a great chance to win. I just can't pick them to win this week.
All right, let's hit a break and talk to Danny Kelly from The Ringer.
Even though sports had a break, your business did not. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. BLUEWIRE. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Football is back in full swing. And you know football's back because we have a 49ers Seahawks game to look forward to on Sunday. And you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, those are my favorite. The customizable player props are the move. You do a little bit of studying. I do a bunch of half-hearted research, and that is how I find ways to win every single Sunday. BetOnline gives you more. I'm telling you, you don't have to take a ton of time and be like a genius numbers whiz to figure this stuff out. It's awesome. And BetOnline gives you a million ways to win. And BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. I know I threw a lot of stuff at you, but that's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BLUEWIRE. Use that promo code at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, we got Danny Kelly from The Ringer here with us today. Danny does draft stuff. He does fantasy football stuff. He does regular NFL stuff. But he's dialed into the Seahawks living up in the Pacific Northwest. Danny, thanks for hopping on. And chatting about the 5-1 Seahawks with us.
Yeah, the NFC West this year is kind of ridiculous. It's just like all four really good teams. So that's always fun.
It gets really... it's wild that like the Niners are in last place at 4-3 and you look over at the NFC East and it's just like every team is a dumpster fire and one team has to win it. It's crazy.
Seriously, it's crazy. And the 49ers have like half their team on the injured reserve and they're still good. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, obviously really good coaching, but
yeah.
Very fun division this year.
It gets really weird if the 49ers pull out a win on Sunday. Because then you're going to have a bunch of 5-2s and a 5-3, and it's a fun division. I'm excited to see how it kind of plays out. So let's talk about the Seahawks, though. The thing that really jumps out about them, the different sides of the ball jump out for different reasons. I want to start with the defense, because that was so what defined the Seahawks through the early portion of the Pete Carroll era. Right. And now they're one of the worst defenses in the league. What happened?
It's one of those things where they, I guess, decided to spend more of their resources on the offensive side of the ball. The other thing is the resources that they have spent on defense just haven't panned out the way that they wanted to, I think, in a lot of scenarios. So, sure. Obviously Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, like that triad, plus Chris Carson is just really, really dangerous. They got that offense humming, but on defense, they basically didn't really do anything to upgrade their pass rush. They let Jadeveon Clowney walk in free agency. Kind of a weird situation all offseason where, Seahawks fans in this area were like, what are you guys waiting for? What are you doing here? Because it was a long, protracted free agency. Jadeveon Clowney was a free agent basically right until the beginning of the year. So it was kind of strange. And, they brought in Bruce Irvin, former Seahawk who kind of like bounced around a little bit. And then he tore his ACL early on in the season. They drafted Darrell Taylor in the second round, and he has been on the injured reserve list or whatever, the NFI list, since the beginning of the season because he's been injured. And so that's, that hasn't helped. Their second rounder from a couple of years ago, Rasheem Green, has been injured. So basically, a lot of their key guys that they've tried to like grab to bolster this defensive unit have been injured. The end of the day, their secondary hasn't been what anyone thought it would be. Jamal Adams, they went and traded 2 first round picks for Jamal Adams and he got hurt pretty quickly. So, I think it's a combination of a lack of a talent, a lack of long-term planning and building that just hasn't really worked there for them. And, just some injury, bad luck too. That's kind of like all combined to make this a extremely terrible defense. It's like the most exploitable defense, especially through the air, of any defense maybe in the NFL, other than, a few teams that are irrelevant at this point. So it's a weird, very, very unbalanced overall team for the Seahawks this year.
So you mentioned Jamal Adams, who returned to practice on Wednesday in the first time since suffering a groin injury that cost him the last 3 games. What's his impact on the defense been? And can he help the pass defense, particularly with George Kittle? And also, how much do you anticipate the Carlos Dunlap trade helping that defense in the pass rush?
Yeah, I think both of those guys coming back will help. I'm not sure either will help this week against 49ers because I don't think Dunlap is going to play this week, or at least it's not really looking like he will be able to come in and immediately, because I think they have the COVID stuff they have to go through.
Yeah, he's not eligible to play until the following game against Buffalo.
Yeah, so he's not really in the short-term picture, but I think he will help a lot because honestly, they need all the help they can get. He's a veteran. He's long. He fits the defense, the style. I think he'll be able to give them, at the very least, some pressure, which they haven't been able to get. He might not be like a big sack guy, but he'll be able to like collapse the pocket, get quarterbacks off their spot, things like that. It's really something the Seahawks have been missing a lot this week or this year. Going back to the Cardinals game on Monday Night Football, Kyler Murray dropped back to pass 50 times. The Seahawks had 0 sacks and 1 quarterback hit. And I believe it depends on who you talk to, but I believe they're like anywhere from 1 to 4 pressures in that entire game. Oh, so they were not able to get anything done. Part of it was, I think, kind of like the strategy of the game was to, mush rush on the outside and keep Kyler Murray from really hurting them with his legs. But So, you know, they weren't necessarily just like pinning their ears back and trying to get after him. They were trying to like keep him contained. But at the same time, it just, it didn't work either way. Like, he still got a bunch of rushing yards and a touchdown, and he totally picked him apart through the air. So the CX defense has just been really bad. So Dunlop will definitely help in the long run, throughout the rest of the season, I should say. But with Jamal Adams, I don't really know if he's going to play yet. He's just getting back into practice. And I think it would be wishful thinking to have him come out at least be full speed this week. We'll see how it goes as the week goes on. But the way that he will help and the way that he could help this week is he's their best blitzer by far. And in fact, he's probably their best pass rusher, which is, you know, all you really need to know about the Seahawks defense right now in terms of, you know, their ability to rush passer. He's so good as a blitzer. They use him all over the defensive formation. You know, he's kind of just like that joker. He's like the Tyrann Mathieu style, where he lines up in different spots every snap. You never really know where he's going to be coming from. When he was playing for the Seahawks, he was really good. He was making a lot of plays, but at the same time, they were being so aggressive with him, you know, blitzing him so much, that they were also giving up a lot of plays when he didn't get home, if that makes sense. So, like, you know, he was making big plays, but at the same time, he was making the Seahawks defense a little bit vulnerable the way that they were using him. And I want to say, I saw a stat today that the Seahawks have given up the second most explosive pass plays in the NFL this year, which is like, it's the antithesis of what you think of when you think of the Seahawks defense. Like, for all the years when they were elite defense, they never want to get beat deep. You never want to get beat over your head. Limit explosive plays. That was like all Pete Carroll's mantra. Like, don't give up explosive plays. We'll let people kind of like, you know, take what they want to take underneath, but we're just not giving up big plays. So it's kind of weird to see that. But yeah, basically at the end of the day, the Seahawks defense is the only reason they've survived. And the only reason I think the Seahawks are 5-1 apart from their offense is that they've managed to get turnovers. The defense has, and they've managed to stop opposing teams on fourth downs and in the red zone a little bit more than you'd expect. So definitely like a bend don't break type defense, but they've broken a lot too. So I have very little confidence in defense right now, but they do have some reinforcements coming.
I want to jump over to the other side of the ball real quick. Has the Seahawks increased usage of Russell Wilson? I guess that I'll more leaning more on their passing game. I'll word it that way. Did that arise from Pete Carroll getting sick of people asking him about letting Russ cook, or is it just a factor, or is it a matter of necessity because their defense isn't as good?
I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah. I mean, I would not say that it is, he got sick of people asking about it. I think he got sick of one person,
Twitter,
asking him about it, which is, who is Russell Wilson? I think Russell Wilson lobbied a lot over the offseason. Obviously, he carries a lot of weight, you know, with this franchise. He's the Mr. face Unlimited. Of the franchise. Yeah. Mr. Unlimited. that is ridiculous. But yeah, I really don't know exactly how it all went down. I'm still shocked that he did let them start letting him cook, you know, like, it still doesn't feel real to me. And I know, like, literally, I got a text chain with some Seahawks, fellow Seahawks fans. We're still dubious it's going to last. Like, we're pretty sure Pete Carroll is going to go back into his shell, run on first and second down. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I can't believe this is real, kind of deal. So, it's very shocking, to be honest, because, you know, Pete Carroll, just to give you like full background on Pete Carroll, like, when he came back into the NFL, he vowed to do it his way. You know, he was like, I'm going to go out doing it my way. I'm not going to listen to what other people say. I'm not going to let the front office or the ownership like influence what I want to do, or the fans. Pete Carroll, you know, he looks up, he's like from the old school. And so he just like, he wanted to come into it his way. His way is exactly what we saw with the Seahawks for like the first, you know, like 9-10 years of the Seahawks era, which is ball control, don't turn it over, you know, be really physical on defense. He has this thing where you're completing the circle of physicality, and it's like, run the ball, really tough on special teams, and really tough defense. And like, the Seahawks have like none of that now. I mean, they're basically just like passing and scoring tons and tons of points. Their defense giving tons and tons of yards and points. So it's very different. And the reason that I think a lot of Seahawks fans are worried it's going to go away is because that defense is so bad. There's the idea that he could, like, Pete Carroll could be like, the defense is bad because we're doing this on offense. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We're not giving our defense enough rest. We're not blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so I think it was a combination of, you know, they just don't have the defense to actually stop people. So they do have to score points. And to be clear, like, the difference between the Seahawks offense this year versus basically the rest of the Pete Carroll era is a number of things. It's more passing early in the game, you know, first and second quarter, and coming out guns blazing versus, like, in the old days, literally they would come out poke and prod. It's like a boxer who comes out and is just, like, you know, dancing around for the first, like, seven rounds before he even throws a punch. Right. That was, like, what the Seahawks would do. And there's an old joke on Seahawks Twitter, like, you know, you can start trying to score points in the first half. You could try and score points in the first half. You know, it's like that. That's how absurd it was. Like, try to score points. It just drives me nuts. Obviously, you can probably hear in my voice, like, how annoying it was for so long. Obviously they were successful, but a lot of that had to do with, like, how elite their defense was. But now they're not only passing way more in the first and second quarter, in the third quarter, but they're passing far, far more, like, exponentially more on first and second down, which is a huge, huge deal. And, you know, all that's happened with the Seahawks letting Russell Wilson do his thing is he's having, like, the most historic quarterback season of all time. That's all that's happened.
Yeah. It turns out a generational quarterback is going to play well when you give him the opportunity.
Yeah. And some weapons.
Wild stuff.
So what we've, like, what I think a characteristic of the Seahawks under Pete Carroll has certainly been, you know, they're a better team in November and December typically than September and October. And now that we're getting to that point in the season, I want to ask you if you think the defense, it doesn't sound like you're overly optimistic, but I'm curious if you think the defense can start playing better, and can it get to a point where the Seahawks are legitimate Super Bowl contenders? Because based on what we've seen so far, it seems like the defense isn't going to be good enough to beat every team in the playoffs that they're going to face in the NFC.
Yeah. I do think that there is a chance that the defense improves. I think getting Carlos Dunlap, it could help. Getting Jamal Adams back will undoubtedly help. Having guys like Daryl Taylor potentially come back, like, the Daryl Taylor thing, he's a rookie second rounder that Seahawks picked in the draft. It's been kind of mysterious because you didn't really hear much about his injury. And then Pete Carroll the other day said that they're hoping he can play this year, which is like, oh God, that doesn't sound good. So we don't really know exactly what's going on there, but if he can come back, if they can get some of their younger guys going, Alton Robinson, who was a fifth round pick, has flashed at times. You know, I do think there are ways that they can improve marginally. I don't think they're ever going to be a good defense, but I do think they could be, you know, relatively better than the worst. So hey, I do think on. Like, if they could be just league average or, you know, bottom third, like somewhere in the top of the bottom third, if that makes sense, then that would give them much better, give them a much better chance of, you know, really competing with, you know, some of the teams, the best teams in the NFC and in the entire league. I do think their offense, you know, it is one of the best offenses in the NFL, and that will make them competitive against whoever they play. But right now, if that offense isn't perfect, we saw that against the Cardinals, Russell Wilson really uncharacteristically made three huge mistakes with his picks. And, you know, if they're not perfect, then it's very difficult for them to win. So, They need the defense to do a little bit more for sure.
If Chris Carson is out, do you think we see, like, a heavy dose of 49ers legend Carlos Hyde, or will it be
oh my God, I forgot that he was on the 49ers.
Yeah. Carlos Hyde revenge game on deck, Danny, yes or no?
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Is it going to be, like, more of a split with, like, him and Travis Homer, like a committee sort of thing, or would he be the featured guy?
That's a good question. We don't know yet. It's Wednesday. We're recording Wednesday. So right now, the indications are that Carlos Hyde, Travis Homer, both are injured, and Chris Carson also injured. So they're basically their top three running backs are injured. Carson's unlikely to play. Carlos Hyde right now has a hamstring injury, I believe, that isn't considered serious, but could hold him out or limit him this week. Travis Homer has a knee injury. It's unclear exactly. They're basically, the Seahawks are playing coy. Like, Pete Carroll is not really willing to give out much info today. So I hope the Carlos Hyde revenge game narrative happens, because that'd be fun. I remember watching Carlos Hyde on like Sunday or Monday Night Football early on in his career, and I was thinking, this guy's just going to be like a huge stud in the NFL. It didn't really pan out, but do you remember that game? Like, he just looked awesome.
The one against Minnesota, right?
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember anything about the game other than it was in prime time and he looked amazing. So
yeah, it was either the like Niners played back to back late Monday night games, a doubleheader week one in 2015 and 2016, and they blew the doors off the Vikings and the Rams in those games. And it was those games, it was like, oh man, the Chip Kelly era is going to be awesome. And it didn't turn out that way. It turned out to be kind of a misnomer.
It was not great.
But anyway, yeah, he might not play. If he does play, I would assume he's going to be a little bit limited. So we might see some DJ Dallas this week, which would be interesting. That's a Seahawks. Cool. I think he was a fourth round pick out of Miami. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the running back group, because you can't really bring in a guy last second either because of all the COVID protocols. So, you know, they're in a little bit of a tough spot right now. And I think that it'll probably be DJ Dallas. And if Hyde can play, Hyde.
Just real quick, that was week one of the 2015 season. The Niners beat Minnesota 20-3. Carlos Hyde, 26 carries, 168, and 2 TDs.
Yeah. Oh my God. I remember that game. I was just thinking, he was awesome. He one looks of them, like a freight train. Yeah.
Yeah. One of them, he had a spin move.
Yes. That's right.
That was, God, I talked to him about the game about it afterwards. Why am I blanking on the Ohio State quarterback who did it like the same week? He was a slot receiver for the Texans.
Oh, Braxton Miller.
Yeah, Braxton Miller. Yes. He basically did the same thing as Braxton Miller, and him and I talked about it afterwards, and he was all pumped to be able to text Braxton about that.
I remember that Braxton Miller spin move. That was like everyone was freaking out about that. Yeah. Hyde, I mean, Hyde has had a good career. I mean, he went over 1,000 yards last year. Finally. So it's kind of funny how, you know, I guess expectations versus reality, it kind of hurt him because he was a high pick and he started out so hot. But yeah, you know, I think he's a good backup for sure.
The 2020 NFL draft class, I'm going to ask you about the draft because you're good at breaking that stuff down. The 2020 receiver class was supposed to be really good. Mm-hmm. And Brandon Ayuk had a 100-yard game against the Patriots, and I went to look and see how many rookie receivers this year have had 100-yard games, and it's a lot.
Yeah,
I was like, is he the first one? No, he's not. He's like the sixth one. Has this class exceeded, met, or been under your expectations?
I think exceeded. I was really high on this group, and I love a lot of these players, but I don't think I even expected, you know, guys like Justin Jefferson to be like record-setting pace with what he was doing. And CeeDee Lamb, until he had a big goose egg last week, was like on pace to have like one of the best receiver rookie seasons ever. And so, I think it definitely exceeded my expectations. These guys have come in and immediately become like, you know, go-to guys in their offense. Like T. Higgins for the Bengals is already like, you know, well, he passed up AJ Green for a few games. AJ Green's coming back a little bit and challenging the young guy, but he looks really, really good. And then I love Ayuk. He was one of my favorite guys. Laviska Shenault has been pretty good for the Jaguars. You know, obviously Claypool looks like the next superstar in the NFL for a couple weeks there. And so, you know, there's a lot of really good guys. It's such an awesome class. And we haven't even seen, like, you know, Denzel Mims just got back on the field. He outplayed Claypool like by far at the Senior Bowl. Like, Claypool was a ancillary story at the Senior Bowl. It was like, oh yeah, he looks decent. Denzel Mims was absolutely freaking dominant at the Senior Bowl. So like, just to give that like some context, I'm not saying that Claypool is bad. I'm just saying like Mims could be awesome too. We haven't seen Jalen Reagor yet, really. I mean, a couple games, he's been hurt. He's just coming back now. And same with Henry Ruggs, who's been hurt here and there. So, and then Jerry Jeudy, who, man, their offense is just so terrible, the Broncos, that we haven't really, you know, gotten to see exactly what he can do. But yeah, I love this rookie class. It's really, really exciting. It looks to me like a bunch of superstars in the league down the line, including Ayuk.
We'll finish off with this. Do you have a prediction for Sunday? And it doesn't necessarily have to be a score. Is there anything you think is going to happen, like in the game or anything like that?
Oh man, that's a good question. I think that, I mean, this is like the most obvious and easy one to do, but I think that Shanahan's going to scheme up stuff to make the Seahawks defense look so stupid. It's like, this is going to be pulling out my hair. You know what I mean? Like, he's so good at scheming up ways to get guys in space and get yards after the catch. And the Seahawks defense has just been so it's like Keystone Copy like this year. It's just like, they don't know what they're doing. They're always out of position. There's always a wide open guy somewhere. And that's before you even get Shanahan coming in and like, you know, the meme where it's like, I think Stephen Rees from USA Today does it, where it's like a sniper like scope. And it's like, here's who Shanahan is going to just totally exploit in this game. And I'll be interested to see who the guy that he picks on in the Seahawks game this week. But yeah, I don't have, to put it lightly, I don't have high hopes for the Seahawks defense in this game. I think it's going to be kind of a shootout type game.
I like it. It's Danny Kelly. You can hear him on the Ringer Fantasy Football Show. It's the only fantasy football podcast I listen to, and it's great. So make sure and do that.
I thought you were going to say it's the only fantasy football podcast in the world.
Yeah, that's it. It's the fantasy football podcast. A lot of good stuff on the Niners in this week's episode. That's why I brought it up.
I appreciate
Danny, thanks
that.
So much, man.
Thank you, guys.